There you go.
Tonight is March 30th, and we are in Parshas Vayetze, page 146. The next episode in Yaakov's travels. We finished last week talking about Luz. And now he actually moves on and actually goes to Haran. So starting from the beginning of Perichotes chapter 29. Vayisa Yaakov raglav, and Yaakov lifted up his feet. Vayelech Artsav and Ekedem, and he went to the land of the children of the east. Vayar, and he saw, Vinei ve'er basadeh, and behold, there was a well in the field. Vinei sham shlosha ed reitzon rovitzim oleha, behold, there were three flocks of sheep crouching upon it. Kimin habe'er hahi yashku ha'adarim. For from that well, the flocks would water. V'ha'evin gedola al pi habe'er, and the stone was large on the mouth of the well. V'nesfu shama chol ha'adarim, and all of the flocks would gather there. V'gololu es ha'evin me'al pi habe'er, and they would roll the stone from on top of the mouth of the well. V'hishku es ha'tzon, and they would water the sheep. V'hishibu es ha'evin al pi habe'er, and come on, they would return the stone on the mouth of the well to its place. So far we have a narrative telling us the information that we need to know. This is all background information. Now we have the storyline. Vayomer lahem Yaakov, and Yaakov said to them, Achai, my brothers, me'ayin atem, where are you from? Vayomeru, and they said, Me'charon anachdu, we are from Charon. Vayomer lahem, and he said to them, Hayadatem es Lavan ben Nachar, do you know Lavan, the son of Nachar? Vayomeru, and they said, Yodana, we know. Vayomer lahem, and he said to them, Hashalom lo, is there peace to him? Vayomru shalom, and they said, peace. V'hinei Rachel bito ba'a im hatzona. Behold, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep. Vayomer, and he said, Hein od hayom gadol. Behold, the day is still long, still large. Lo eis hayasef hamikneh. It is not the time to gather the flock, the sheep, the cattle. Hashku hatzona l'churu. Water the sheep and go and shepherd. It's not time to come home yet. Vayomru, and they said, Lo nuchal, we're not able. Ad asher ye'asfu chol ha'adarim, until all of the flocks gather. V'galalu es ha'evin, and they roll the stone, me'al pi haber, from upon the mouth of the well. V'yishkinu atzon, and we will water the flock. Odenu medaber imam, he was still speaking with them. V'rachel ba'a, and Rachel had come, im atzon asher lo'avio, with the sheep that was to her father. Ki ro'ahi, for she was a shepherd. And it was, behold, when Yaakov saw Rachel, the daughter of Lavan, the brother of his mother, and the sheep of Lavan, the brother of his mother, and Yaakov approached, and he rolled the stone from upon the mouth of the well, and he watered the flock of the mother, of Lavan, the brother of his mother. Vayishak Yaakov l'Rachel, and Yaakov kissed Rachel. Vayisa es kolo vayefk, and he lifted up his voice and he cried. And then we're going to have a dialogue between Yaakov and Rachel, and then the meeting between Yaakov and Lavan. So this is a pretty well-known story. And I think that we can ask many good questions about this story. Let's go back to the beginning of the chapter, and let's go through it a little more carefully. So Yaakov now leaves, and he goes to the land in the east, which means he goes to Haran. He goes to that area, and he sees, and behold, there is a well in the field. Now, this is what he sees. He sees a well in the field, and he sees there three flocks of sheep crouching upon it. Now, at this point, that's what he sees. Now, the pasuk continues and tells us, "Ki min habe'er hahi yashku ha'adarim." For from that well, the flocks would water, and the stone was big on top of the mouth of the well. And there the flocks would gather, and they would roll the stone. They would roll the stone from upon the mouth of the well, and they would water the sheep, and then they would return the stone to the mouth of the well to its place. That's two psukim. That's pasuk beis and gimel 2 and 3. What I want to know is how much the pasuk beis is introduced with the word vayar, and he saw. Yaakov saw. Now Yaakov was, as we already know, a pretty intelligent guy. He was a very learned man. At this point in his life, he is 77 years old. Okay, so he knows a thing or two. What does he see? At what point are we told what? Where does the story end? What he saw and begin to tell us, the reader, some background information? It's not clear in these two psukim, Beis and Gimel 2 and 3, where is the end of what he saw and the beginning of what he didn't see but we're being told. Again, what are the facts here? He saw a well in the field, and he saw three flocks of sheep crouching upon it. Now the Torah continues and says, and I want to know, did he see this or are we just being told this? For from that well the flocks would water, and the stone was big on top of the well. And the flocks would gather there, and they would roll the stone from upon the mouth of the well, and they would water the sheep, and they would return the stone onto the mouth of the well to its place. How much of that did he see, and how much of that did he not notice, but we're being told, because otherwise we won't understand the story.
How do you distinguish if you go and see sheep you're having at a well, that they have three flocks?
You can't see that.
Well, he sees three shepherds.
Yeah.
Right. So that seems that much he saw. So he definitely saw a well. That he definitely saw. He definitely saw three flocks of sheep crouching upon it. I would assume he saw the stone on top of the well.
Right.
I imagine he saw that. I assume that he noticed that this would be the well from which they would water the sheep. So I imagine the entire pasuk beis, verse 2, he understands. He's taken that all in. There's a well. There are three flocks gathered upon it. From this well, they would water their sheep. And there was a stone on top of the well. Now, pasuk gimel, is this what he also noticed? Or are we being told this so we understand? And they gather, the shepherds would gather there, the flocks would gather there, and they would roll the stone from upon the well, and they would water the sheep, and they would return the stone to its place. Is that what he noticed already, or is that what we're being told so that we understand the story?
We're being told.
It sounds like we're being told that. Okay, he didn't know that. Now, if he didn't know that, it must mean that there is an alternate explanation. You understand? He's no dunce. So he sees three flocks. He sees a well. He sees three flocks. He sees them crouching there. He knows this is where they're going to water the sheep. And he sees a big stone on top of it. Now, he must have in his mind other possibilities besides the reality. Because if there's only one possibility, then Yaakov has already figured it out. So there must be more than one explanation for why these facts would be there. Now, the true explanation is what the Torah tells us. The true explanation is that they're waiting for more to gather so that they can roll it off the top of the well. But Yaakov must have at least more than one possibility as to why he sees what he sees. Now, this is borne out from the fact that he goes on and he says to them, "My brothers, where are you from? Do you know Lavan? We know him. Is there Pistim? There is Pistim. And behold, his daughter is coming with the sheep." And then Yaakov asks, the day is still long. It's not the time to gather in the flock. Water the sheep and go back and shepherd. So Yaakov hasn't gotten it yet. Because then they respond to him, no, we can't do that because we were waiting until everybody gathers together. We're not able to do that. We're waiting for everybody to gather together so we can roll the stone off the well and we can water the sheep. So what does Yaakov not get? Does he not see that this stone is too large for them to roll it off? What is he not? He says to them, water the sheep and go and shepherd. What are you waiting for?
Well, didn't he, wasn't the statement made in here that he was wondering why they were watering it that early, that it was early in the day?
Well, it seems like he's wondering why they're waiting around. I don't know. I'm not a shepherd. So I don't know. I imagine that he would water the flock more than once per day. But normally, if it's the middle of the day, you take the sheep, you water them, and bring them back out to the pasture. But that at the end of the day, you water the flock. Because he doesn't say to them, the day is still long. Why are you watering the sheep? That's not what he says to them. He says, the day is still long. Water the sheep and go back and shepherd. What are you hanging around for? So how does Yaakov miss the fact that there's a large stone on top of the well, and that's why they can't water the sheep? It's too big. They need more people. What is Yaakov missing? What is he thinking other than what is the truth?
He's lazy.
He's just coming from Yeshiva, and I think he's just not into the everyday thing. I think he's a little spiritual and very...
Well,
a lot of strength, he's going to pick it up.
Okay.
Later.
Okay, now the second explanation is possible, that Yaakov himself, as we know, was a very powerful man, as we've already ascertained with the fact that Rivka is afraid he's going to kill Esau. Right. The whole thing, we know Yaakov's very strong. And over here, when he later on, as when he rolls the stone off, Rashi comments, it teaches you how strong a man he was. He was a very, very strong man. He was a very powerful man. So perhaps we could say he doesn't realize that other people don't have the strength that he has. It's hard to believe that. Most people who are very, very strong know that they're stronger than other people. I think, you know, it could be he missed that, but most people know that they possess more strength than others, those who are really, really strong. So, although that is possible, we can't say it's impossible, but I wonder if there's another explanation. I want to point out to you another nuance.
Did he have any rule at that time? Did he
didn't
pay attention?
I don't know. It doesn't tell us. But I want to point out to you another nuance. In Pasuk Beis, verse 2. Now the Torah is telling us, what did Yaakov see? Now, here, imagine yourself. Imagine each one of us. We're moving along in the desert, and we come upon this scene. What's going to be the first thing that we notice? There's four things here. There's four facts. We see a well. We see three flocks of sheep gathered at the well. This is the well, we can surmise, this is the well from which they water the sheep. And there's a large stone upon the well. What's the first thing you're going to notice, or the second thing? What would be the order that you would imagine the Torah should tell? Wouldn't the Torah describe it to us in the order that Yaakov notices it? As if I'm walking up, you know, you say to somebody, you know, you're walking up and you meet somebody. The first thing you notice about the person is, boom, right? That's going to be the most noticeable thing. The thing that to you is the most shocking, the most surprising, is the thing that's going to be the most noticeable. So, okay, the Torah tells us he notices a well. Now that's, you know, you're in the desert, you're traveling, a well, and that was a rest stop. That was an important thing. So the first thing you're going to notice, there's a well. That's a place where people gather. That's the first thing you're going to notice. That makes sense. He notices a well. The second thing he notices are the people and animals gathered around the well. He doesn't just notice there are sheep and people around the well. He notices there are three flocks of sheep along the well. So he's noticed already how, not just that there are people gathered there, but how many there are. There are three that he notices.
So the sheep are of the same color? Sheep can be different colors.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know.
But he didn't make mention in the beginning that there's this big rock on top of the well.
That's right. The rock isn't mentioned. He sees the well. Okay. He sees there are people there with sheep. Three different flocks. This must be that he surmises this is the well from which they water the sheep, and there's a large stone on top of it.
Well, if you walked into an area like that, you wouldn't notice the well first. You would notice the flock of sheep. You would notice the men, and that would be the last thing you would probably wonder. Then why are they all there? Then you would look.
You see the well.
Right.
And that all.
You see the stone, and then you'd know there was a well.
In my mind, seeing the stone last does make sense because in his mind, I mean, he sees the well, he sees the sheep, and he wonders why don't they water the sheep, and then You look at the well to go through the action of watering, and that's...
Okay, good. So that's the incongruency. That's what, one second. What's going on here? That's what's out of place. There's a well. There are people with flocks. They're going to water the sheep. Oh, there's a stone on top of the well. Now, that makes a lot of sense. And to me, that is what the Torah is telling us. The stone is mentioned last because that's the thing that throws everything off. Everything makes sense until you get to the stone. But if that's true, then Yaakov already understands what's going on. See, if that's true, he's already figured it out. He understands the score. He understands. There's people there with a flock of sheep. They're supposed to water the sheep, but they can't. There's a stone on top of the well. So then why later does he say to them, water the sheep and go and shepherd? What's missing over here? Didn't he already figure it out that the problem is there's a big stone on top of the well?
But it says here, it is not yet time to bring the livestock.
Right. And therefore what? Water the flock and go shepherd.
Well, yeah, but he said it's not time.
It's not time to bring them home. Right? Not time to gather them in.
So it's time to give them water. First of all, why is he telling them anything? It's not his business.
Okay, very good. Very good. What's he saying anything to them for? Now, I want you to know, I'm going to offer a different explanation, but I want you to know that I have a Rebbe. Had a Rebbe in high school who said, you see from here, when you see people doing the wrong thing, you got to speak up. What kind of thing is that? You can't just let them do the wrong thing. Okay.
Yeah, but if I'm walking down the street and I see people, you know, mowing their lawn, I'm not going to intervene and say, why are you mowing your lawn now? Mow your lawn later, you know, whatever.
Well, what he's seeing them doing is he's seeing them wasting their time. They're supposed to be working.
I know.
But
that's
still,
right. Business.
Okay, all right. That's a very American attitude. Right.
Why is there a stone on top of the well?
This is the key question. Why is there a stone on top of the well? What kind of thing is it?
To steal more water. From coming into the
to protect the well.
If it's to protect the well.
You want rain to come into the well.
You may.
Yeah, but also,
you can have heavy winds in the desert.
Hold on.
It grows sand and debris.
The word
also evaporates.
The word be'er, which means well, and the word bor, which is a hole, which also means well, are two different things. A bor is a hole that gets filled with rainwater. A be'er usually means a natural spring. So they're not. You don't need to catch water. But if the only point is to protect the well, you don't need a heavy stone that nobody can roll off of there. You just need a covering that protects it. That's all.
Because
you only want certain people to take water from the well.
Maybe this is when the well comes to town of Abraham,
when
he had so much trouble with the well.
Hold on. Well, this is in Haran. Wait a second. Well, we're getting hot over here. Hold on. Let's understand this. The only reason for there to be a stone on top of the well that can only be removed by a lot of people is if the purpose is to keep some people
away from it,
or somebody away from the well. Right? Because if there would be a lot of people, there was no combination lock. It was as long as you had a lot of people, you could roll the stone off the well. But if you didn't have a lot of people, you couldn't. So there was a method in place over here that kept the well from being used by fewer than a large amount of people. Okay. This is key. Mm-hmm. The Torah tells us in Pasuk Gimel, the flocks would gather there, they would roll the stone from upon the well and water the sheep, and they would return the stone to the top of the well to its place. Why does the Torah tell us they would return the stone to its place? Isn't that understood? Isn't it obvious? If they would roll it off, if this was the custom, they roll off the stone, then obviously after they would water the flock, they would return the stone.
The comment here says right here, they were waiting actually for Hashem to help them.
Okay, good. I'm gonna offer something else, but good. That's a good one.
Is to emphasize ownership.
You mean who owns the well? Mm-hmm. Okay.
And like when you go into a place, you open the door and then you shut.
Okay, so it shows. Okay. Yaakov says to them, my brothers, where are you from? My brothers, where are you from? They're your brothers, but you don't know where they're from? Right? My brothers, where are you from? He doesn't say, what's your name? He doesn't say, Shalom Aleichem, my name is Yaakov Avinu. What's your name? He doesn't say that. He just says, my brothers, where are you from? And they say, we're from Charan. He says, do you know Lavan, the son of Nachar? And they say, we know him. And he says to them, is there peace to him? And they say, yeah, there's peace. And behold, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep. Then Yaakov says to them, it's still a lot of daylight. It's not the time to gather in the flock, water the sheep, and go and shepherd. Why didn't he ask this question right away? Why the preamble, my brothers, where are you from? We're from Charan. Well, do you know Lavan? You mean Lavan? Is there peace to him? Yeah, there's peace to him. And there's Rachel, his daughter, coming with the sheep.
That makes Mel talk to become friends before he can rebuke them.
Okay. Okay, that could be. That could be.
And it tells him he'll be feeling it. Because I think when you cover the well, it's saying, it's mine, I don't want you to use it. And maybe he had already an inkling he was going to be doing it.
Okay. It seems to me that Yaakov is eliminating possibilities in his mind. He sees the stone on top of the well. Now, it's possible that the reason why the stone is there is to keep people from taking from the well. And therefore, they all have to gather, and they have to roll it off, and they give this sheep flock to drink, and then they roll it back on. So, but there must be other possibilities, as we said. Otherwise, Yaakov wouldn't have to wonder. It would be clear and obvious. So he says to them, he has suspicions here. Because this is strange. You don't find such a thing. A stone so large on top of the well. Where are you from? We're from Charan. Do you know Lavan?
Right.
He's got an idea over here.
But he didn't ask, isn't Lavan's father?
Bisuel.
It's not Nachar.
This guy. But Nachar.
Right.
Yeah, good. Good.
He said it three times. He repeats itself three times.
Lavan ben Nachar. Yeah, good. Remember that Bisuel had been killed. He tried to kill Eliezer, and instead he was right. Killed with the poison. It could be that's the reference, or it could be because he wants to draw attention to Lavan being the grandson of Nachar, who is a brother of Abraham. And to draw that connection. That's a very good point. So do you know Lavan, the son of Nachar? They say, we know him. And he says to them, is there peace to him? Yeah, there's peace. And behold, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep. Now, the Yaakov certainly suspects that the purpose of this stone is to keep people from taking from the well. He also suspects that his cousin Lavan, that oh so wonderful person, has something to do with this. And he's wondering if this is the case. So they say they know him. And Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep. Now, why would Lavan have a stone on top of the well to keep people out of it? Why would Lavan have a stone on top of the well? What's the purpose of a stone on top of the well? Why arrange things that the water can only be taken out when there's a lot of people there? Can you think of another reason why there would be a stone there other than to keep this from happening? When he says to them, why don't you, it's the day still long, why don't you water the sheep and go and shepherd? And they say, we're not able. Now, it could be that Yaakov assumed that this stone, although it was large and required a few people to get it off, would only require three people to get it off. Not more than that. Mm-hmm. And that's why he said to them, roll it off. And they, well, he didn't say roll, he just says, water the sheep. And they say, we're not able, we don't have enough people yet. So that's what clinches it for Yaakov. See, as long as it's a question of gathering three people, then you could say that it's just a question of having a few numbers, a few people there, so that way there wouldn't be any theft, for example. There was, like, let's say, the town ordinance. They didn't want just wanderers coming in and taking water. They wanted it to be, this water is for the shepherds, and therefore, you know, But Lavan's daughter Rachel is coming with the sheep. That means she's now going to approach the well, and they still aren't rolling the stone off the well. But Lavan's own daughter is coming with the sheep. If the purpose, and he's assuming Lavan is the one who's controlling things over here, if Lavan has arranged things in order to protect the water, or to protect his daughter, for example, or to protect his daughter so that she won't be there alone, or she won't be there with only one shepherd, or whatever it is. So she's now coming with the sheep. All right, it's time to roll that stone off and take care of business. What are you waiting for? And they say, we're not able to until we get more shepherds. That means, Yaakov realizes, and he suspected this all along, that the purpose of the stone is to keep people from getting water even after Rachel comes. It's not just to keep the water from being taken before Rachel comes with the sheep. It's even keeping water from being taken after Rachel comes with the sheep until even more shepherds gather. You need a really large amount of people there. Rachel showing up to the well is not enough of a reason to roll the stone off the well, because three people can't do it. So there's not enough, that you need more.
Could Lavan be doing this for Shidduchim purposes? Like he wants...
Okay.
He wants her to meet her future husband.
Oh, I'm going to say exactly what you're saying, but exactly the opposite. What was the last thing that happened at a well? What happened? Eliezer came to the well. And he says to God, I don't know who the right girl is. Show me a sign. If she comes and she offers, and in that moment, Rivka comes out and puts her on her shoulder. He runs over to her, the whole thing. Not only that, they get back to Besuel and Lavan's house, and he tells them the whole story. I came to the well, and I said, God, I don't know who I'm supposed to take. Show me a sign. And he goes through the whole story. Remember, we went through the story twice. They told the whole story to Besuel and Lavan, the whole thing. The whole business. Lavan has a daughter, Rachel. Lavan knows, as we're going to show over and over and over again, that Yaakov is the one who's going to attempt to marry Rachel. He knows this. Everybody knew. Lavan had two daughters, Rachel and Leah. Rivka had two sons, Yaakov and Esav. And they were destined for each other. This was a well-known fact, Rashi tells us. Everybody used to say, Hagadola legadol v'haktana lekatan. The older daughter Leah will go to Esav, the older son, and the younger daughter Rachel will go to the younger son Yaakov. That's why Leah cried all the time, because she knew she was destined for Esav. She knew this. This was a well-known thing. Lavan was not interested in history repeating itself. He was not interested in Yaakov coming and taking Rachel on Yaakov's terms. See, Eliezer came and took Rivka on Eliezer's terms. How do we know that? Because Eliezer came, and the whole thing happened, and they would go back to the house, and they want to give him to eat. He says, no, I'm not eating until I tell you the story. Tells him the story. Fine. Okay. And then they say, everything's from God. Whatever you want, we'll do. Then the next day comes, and Eliezer says, send me away. It's time to go back to my master. And they say, no, it's too soon. Let the girl stay with us for another 10 months or a year. You know, let her hang around for a little while. It's too soon. Eliezer says, hey, my job is finished. I got a sign from God. It's time to go home. They say, all right, let's call the girl and ask her opinion. A radical thing. Ask the Kala what she thinks. Right? They call Rivka. Are you going to go with this man? I'm going. Shalom. And they send her away. Lavan didn't want that to happen. Lavan wanted 20 years of work out of Yaakov. He didn't want Yaakov to come and spirit away his daughter without getting any work out of the man. He wanted shepherding. He wanted work. Yet Lavan wasn't interested in just letting his daughter go. And so Lavan has a system in place. He has a stone on the well. And the stone on the well makes it that no one can get water out of that well without there being a large gathering of people. Which means it's going to be impossible for anybody to come to this well and have some kind of introduction to his daughter without it being witnessed by a lot of people, and he's going to hear about it. Even after Rachel gets to the well, and there are already three shepherds there, it's still not enough people. Who knows how many people would have taken? Maybe 10? Maybe 20? That means that if Yaakov shows up and Rachel is there and he starts schmoozing with Rachel, people are going to start noticing. Someone's going to run back and tell Laban, and he's going to come to the scene and he's going to take over the situation. There's no interest in Yaakov making off with his daughter just like that. And so he has the system in place. That's Yaakov has a suspicion the whole time. Yaakov, as we said, is no dummy. He's no dunce. He knows what's going on. That's why he says them. The first thing out of his mouth is, "My brothers, where are you from? Well, I want to win. Is this a Charon thing, or is this maybe some other? You know, maybe this is maybe it's Pittsburgh. I mean, what is this?" So they say, "No, this is Charon." "Oh, do you know Lavan, by the way?" "Yeah, we know Lavan." "So peace them. Yeah, just peace them." And his daughter is coming. His daughter is coming. Well, either this stone is in place for this purpose, so you roll it off and now give it to his daughter, or it's in place to keep me away from her. Water the sheep and go shepherd. "No, we're not able to. We can't do it. We don't have enough manpower yet." "Ah, now I know," says Yaakov. So Yaakov now gets up, possessing the strength which he always had, which he could have done at any time, but he didn't do it. He could have rolled off those stones in the first place. But he didn't do it because he wasn't going to meddle in everybody's affairs. He wasn't meddling in their affairs. He wasn't saying to them, "Hey, what's going on? Hey, what are you lazing around for?" He wants to know, what is this here for? What's the plan? Am I the target of this stone? Once he discovers he's the target of the stone, he says, "Lavan, I'll take care of you." And he takes that stone and rolls it right off. "Rachel, go ahead. Here's the water." Yaakov is making a very clear message to Lavan. This is not going to be on your terms. Now, Lavan doesn't realize it, but he's going to be able to dictate his own terms anyway. Even though Yaakov thwarted the stone plan. Why? Why is Lavan going to be able to dictate his own terms?
Because he's going to give him land to
Rachel. But why does Yaakov need to work for Rachel? Why can't he just take her? Because he has nothing. He has no money. Remember, Eliezer came with all kinds of things, a huge amount to give, all kinds of gifts and everything. Yaakov comes penniless. So Yaakov is in no position to take Rachel. First of all, he cannot give love on anything. And second of all, he has no livelihood. He can't support a family when he shows up. Eliezer shows up, and remember, Eliezer came, it says, "V'choltuv Adonav b'yado." He took a document that said that all that Avraham has, all the great wealth that Avraham has, is going to be given to Yitzchak. So you can't argue that, "Well, we're afraid to give you our daughter because she won't be cared for. There won't be enough, and there won't be parnasa. There won't be any food on the table." What do you mean? You're talking about one of the wealthiest men in the world, perhaps the wealthiest man in the world, and this is the heir to all that wealth. Don't tell me she's not going to have food to eat. Okay, but Yaakov shows up with nothing. No food, nothing but the shirt on his back. No gifts, no document that he is a wealthy man. He comes with nothing. So it's very easy for Lavan to say, "I can't just give you my daughter. I don't want her to starve to death. You've got to have some livelihood. Did you go to college? Right? What's your degree?" "Nothing. You've been studying all this time. Well, I can't just give her to you." So Lavan is going to be able to dictate his terms anyway, despite the fact that the stone didn't do the trick. But the purpose of the stone was in order to give Lavan the upper hand when Yaakov and Lavan meet. That way it's not Yaakov and Rachel making terms. Now Yaakov and Rachel do make terms over here. And they make very specific terms. And that is what we're going to see next. That they talk to each other and they have a dialogue and there's very specific plans that are laid over here, which are meant to thwart Lavan. They both know who they're dealing with. And they know that they have to be careful about this.
Rabbi.
Yes.
Rachel was, we know her approximate age.
How old?
Seven.
How old, seven?
When she's seven?
I really don't know how old she was. No, Rivka was supposed to have been three.
I thought
they were very precocious. I don't know. Rachel, I don't know.
He was a 77-year-old man.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
72.
No, 77. He's 77.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, the implication is that she's younger. Much younger.
Yeah.
She's too young to arouse the interest of the shepherd boys.
Yeah, she was not... Right. Yeah. She was not, I mean, he's not going to marry her now for another 7 years. Right?
I mean, I'm talking about the father-in-law in particular.
Oh, Lovin.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
The differential in age.
Yeah. Well, he and Lovin were first... He and Lovin... No, Lovin is his uncle. It's his mother's brother.
Yeah.
It's his mother's brother. Yeah, we don't know the exact age. It's true. That's true. That's true. Now...
Didn't Yaakov study with in the tent of Shem and Ever in order to know how to deal with
that? That's right. That's right.
That's why all the thing about the well and all that, he was already in
tent. Yeah, he's very...
The lava right. was going to throw at him.
He's already working. It's a chess game. He's thinking through where's Lovin going with all this. He's really zeroing in on the whole thing. In the end, he's going to figure out and anticipate every move Lovin is going to make. Yaakov is going to anticipate and account for. And in the end, as we will see, it's only because of the compassion of Rachel for Leah that Lovin ends up winning the chess match. It's only because of that. If it wasn't for Rachel's compassion for Leah, that she gives away the signs, which we'll get to in the future, it's only because of that that Lovin actually ends up winning this battle of wits. But Yaakov has got Lovin figured out to a T, and he's got every safeguard in place.
Except for Rachel,
incredible compassion. Right, the chesed of Rachel. Right, the tznius and the chesed of Rachel, which stands for us. I mean, that's really, we're going to get to that. That's the way this is all going. Okay, now... In Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11. Well, before that, let me pick us back one moment, one step. Let's go back to Pasuk Tes 9. Odenu medavrei imam, he's still speaking to them. V'rachel ba'an, Rachel had come. Im hatzon asher la'avia, with the sheep that was to her father. Ki ro'ahi, for she was a shepherd. The mafarshim, the commentaries, point out that Rachel was a shepherd means that Lovin had no sons. It was unheard of to make your daughter a shepherd if you had sons to be the shepherd. Shepherding was not daughter's work; that was son's work, to be out in the hot sun the whole day. And all that, you know, that was what you would have your son doing. The daughters would be doing the work around the house. That would be the typical thing. Not only because of the type of labor was more suited for a man than a woman, but also because it means she's out there with the men, which was not typical, not sneers, and that would not have been the normal way to work things. But he had no sons, so he had no choice but to have his daughter do it. We're going to find later that later on in Parshas Vayetze, he will have sons. 20 years later, he will have sons. And we're going to learn then that it's going to be because of the bracha, because of the blessing, the fact that Yaakov had come to his house, that he now is able to have more children and including sons, and he was able to have that as well.
Is Leah a shepherd also?
It doesn't tell us that Leah was a shepherd. It says Rachel was, which is also a question, right? Leah is the older daughter, Rachel is the younger daughter. So what's okay?
It says now, that the sun hurt her eyes.
Right, there was a commentary like that, right? Because she,
it also makes a comment that Rachel, however, was still too young to arouse the interest mm-hmm. of the shepherd's boy.
Right, which may be why he sent Rachel. Which may be why he sent Rachel instead of Leah. Right. Now, then it says, and it was when Yaakov saw. Now, what did he see? He saw in Pasuk Yud, in verse 10. He saw Rachel, the daughter of Lavan, the brother of his mother, and the sheep of Lavan, the brother of his mother. Yaakov came close and rolled the stone from upon the well, and he watered the sheep of Lavan, the brother of his mother. So, tell me, how romantic is this? He sees Rachel, the daughter of Lavan, the brother of his mother. And he sees the sheep of Lavan, the brother of his mother. And he rolls the thing off the well, and he waters the sheep of Lavan, the brother of his mother. Does it mention Rachel's name three times, or does it mention the brother of his mother three times? Right. It mentions the brother of his mother three times. What is the motivation over here of Yaakov? It doesn't say when he saw Rachel And she had all the sheep, and he saw how hard it was for her and the blazing sun. And he went and he fed, and he rolled the thing off and he watered the sheep of Rachel. No. Rachel is not even in the picture. He watered the sheep of Lavan, the brother of his mother.
He's helping his uncle.
Well,
his mother told him to go to Lavan to find a wife.
Right. That's so correct.
He's seeing that this is part of Lavan.
Right.
This is what he's supposed to be going to get.
Right. Does he care about the sheep of Lavan?
No.
He came here to find the wife. Right. He found Rachel. Right. Does he care about the sheep of but it's love, but not just Lavan, Lavan, the brother of his mother. Because
he's repeating to himself that Lavan is his
mother's brother. The only reason why Lavan has the only reason why Lavan has any merit in Yaakov's eyes is because he is his mother's brother. His mother, who is the incredible tzaddikus, the righteous woman that she is, Lavan's her brother. Okay, Lavan, Nebuchadnezzar's Lavan, but he's at least my mother's brother. I owe him something. And there is some respect due to him because he is the brother of my mother. And so, with that motivation, he sees Rachel, the daughter of Lavan, the brother of my mother, and the sheep of Lavan, the brother of my mother. And so that's why he waters the flock.
It doesn't come naturally.
Well, I don't know if it doesn't come naturally, but this is the motivation. That's where it's coming from. Then it says, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayishak Yaakov l'Rachel, Yaakov kissed Rachel, and he lifted up his voice and he cried. Now, when he kisses Rachel, so you've already read in the commentary that Rachel was not old enough to be attractive in the way that a young man would be attracted to a young woman, number one. Number two, Yaakov was not a young man. He was 77 years old. Number three, we're going to see later that Yaakov is the one who says to Lavan, Yaakov says to Lavan, I'll work for you for 7 years in order to marry your daughter. So Yaakov is the one who sets the time frame of 7 years. A man who is taken with a woman, the last thing he's going to do is say, you know what, I'll marry her in 7 years. That 7 days would feel like 7 years for a man who is stricken by a woman. But that's not what's happening over here. So this kiss, what if he kisses Rachel? Why does he kiss Rachel? What is that about? So the commentaries, first of all, are troubled with how is he allowed to kiss her? Right? This is a question anyway. So the Ramban, Nachmanides, writes that, I can't remember how he writes it, but he writes that this was a kiss of greeting, and he writes this was a kiss.
Kissing cousin?
A relative.
Yeah, a relative. It's still not considered appropriate to kiss a cousin, but this was a young girl, she's still young, and he kissed her. I'm trying to remember how he writes it. I think he writes he kissed her. I think he said on the hand. I think he says on the hand or on the head. I don't remember how he says it. But anyway, that's what it was over here. And it was for seeing his relative. And he lifts up his voice and he cries. Now, why would he cry? He sees her, he kisses her, and he cries.
Because she wouldn't be buried with him.
Okay, so that Rashi tells us, the commentary is, that he saw with prophecy that even though he was going to marry Rachel, but she would not ultimately be buried with him. She would be buried on the road, and he would not be buried with her. So that's why he cried. He realized that he would not be eternally with her. That's why he cried. Which means that it does matter being buried with the spouse. That seems to be relevant. Why is he given that prophecy here, right here? I mean, this is something which he saw right here. I would like to suggest, I have not seen this anywhere, I would like to suggest that it is through the kiss that he realizes it. In other words, when he kissed her, and that was a closeness, that was a qurba, that was a closeness, so then he was given a sense of how close she was ultimately going to be with him. And his level, what he's able to see into the future with his prophecy, with his Ruach HaKodesh, with his spiritual ability to see things, he sees very clearly, so he's able to understand just how close ultimately he's going to be with her. And he saw that that closeness was going to be cut short, and he would not be buried with her.
But Rabbi, he knew way prior to this that this was his future bride.
Mm-hmm.
And after all of the time, that from the time he found out to the time he actually met her, which is this time,
mm-hmm.
and you anticipate somebody to be your wife, and it's taken what period of time from, do you think it was, from when he found out?
I don't know when he found, his mother told him to go when he was 63, and this is 14 years later, he's 77, remember he's learned for those 14 years.
But when did they find her, what was the time element in here?
Well, she wasn't...
When his servant found her.
No, the servant, that was earlier, that was with Rivka.
That's what,
That was earlier.
That was earlier.
That was with his mother.
That was with his mother.
Right.
Sorry.
Right.
Confused.
Right. So here he sees, he understands they're not going to be ultimately buried together. Now, look at Pasuk Yud-Beis 12. Vayaged Yaakov l'Rachel. Yaakov told Rachel, ki achi aviyahu, that he was the brother of her father. V'chi ben Rivka hu, and that he was the son of Rivka. V'taratz v'tagei le'aviyah. And she ran and told her father. Now everybody's bothered with this. He told her that he's the brother of her father. He is not the brother of her father. He is the nephew of her father. And that he is the son of Rivka. Well, I mean, is that two different things? What did he tell her exactly? So the Gemara tells us, the Talmud says, he said to her, he told her who he was, and he said, I'd like to marry you. She said, my father is a trickster. He's never going to give me to you easily. He said to her, I'm your father's brother, which means if he deals in a tricky way with me, I can deal in an equally tricky way with him. I can match him move for move. If he tries to play games with me, I'll play games with him. Don't worry about that. I'll meet him every way. I'll meet him head on. Every place that he tries to get me, I'll get him. I'm his brother. Now, this is Yaakov. This is Yaakov, who is the man of truth. Ish Emes. Yaakov, this is the great patriarch. So, that's a pretty startling thing to hear from Yaakov. And this is Rachel, who's meeting him for the first time. So then he tells her, but have no fear. I'm the son of Rivka. Ultimately, I'm not Lavan. I'm not like your father. I'm going to meet him head on if he tries to deal with me that way. I'm not going to be a doormat and be stepped on by him. I'm going to meet him head on. But what is my essence? Who am I really? I am the son of Rivka. Really, it is the righteousness of my mother, your Rachel's aunt, that is in me. And that's who I really am. I'm not like your father. Now this is crucial, because the Gemara tells us, if you want to know how the children of a woman will be, you should check her brothers. If you're... What's that? Or her uncles, okay. But if you want to know, if you're looking for a bride, and you would like to know how will your children turn out, look at her brothers. Well, who was Rivka's brother? Lavan. So Yaakov is the son of Rivka, and her brother is Lavan. So there could be a fear here that he is like Lavan. So essentially what he's telling Rachel is, I am like Lavan in the sense that I can match him. I can deal with him. But if you want to know what my essence is not Lavan. My essence is the son of Rivka. That's where I come from. Now, this is a very important point because it tells us a lot of how Hashem expects us to deal with people who are deceitful and difficult. We Jews are expected by Hashem to hold ourselves to a higher standard. We are expected not to stoop to the level of others, to be honest as honest can be, to be honest on every level, not to cheat and not to steal, and to be honest even if we could get away with something, but to be honest. That's what we're expected to do, because that's what Yaakov was. Yaakov was 100% honest. As we'll see later in the parasha, as he testifies and as is borne out by the parasha, that he is an honest man. However, the Pasuk also tells us, the verse says, David HaMelech writes this in Tehillim, Im Naval Titavol, Vimikesh Titapol, with a Naval, with a person who is acting in a disgusting manner, you give him back in kind. With a man who is acting in a crooked manner, you act crooked with him, you give him back in kind. This is a very tricky thing. On the one hand, we're expected to be honest, even when we get away with something, but not to stoop to the level of those who are tricksters and get away with things and are thieves. On the other hand, if someone is trying to dupe us and trying to trick us and trying to get something out of us that is deceitful, we are expected to meet them head on. We're expected to deal with them in kind. We don't believe in turning the other cheek. That is not a Jewish belief. If someone tries to slap us, not only do we say slap him back, we say slap him first. If someone tries to attack us, the Torah says, get up and attack him first. If he comes to you, try to kill you, you kill him first. Shoot first. That's what the Torah says. If someone, we will be as honest as we can be, and we'll be as nice and kind and good as we can be to everybody. But try and start up with us, the Torah says, you meet them head on, and you get them first. Don't let them take advantage. And that's what Yaakov is setting that tone over here with Laban. I'm ready to be Rivka's son. I'm ready to do that with anybody who cares to act with me that way. But if you're going to start up with me, he says to Rachel, he's going to start up with me, I want you to understand, he's going to get it back in spades. I'm going to get him right back. And I'll anticipate his every move. And that's what Yaakov does. He anticipates, as I said, he anticipates every move of Laban, and we'll see in the end, it's only because of Rachel's compassion it doesn't work out. Yeah.
You know, being the target that he was and the nevuah that he had, and you see that he's dealing with someone like Laban with such aggression, because he's a person. Why did he set the time of 7 years? Why did he put himself in an environment, you know, to be worked down with the wishes and the
okay.
and the horror of this person that could wear down a person like that? I mean, even if he spent 14 years
good.
In Shiva,
good.
Why did he take that 7 years? Why did he say, I work for a year, I build up something, and then I'm taking you right and I'm going?
Okay, we're going to deal with this next week, but the simple answer is, that he knew that was the right time. Because she wasn't ready yet. And Rivka had said to him, you should stay with Lavan Yamim Achadim, which means a short time, which is undefined. But Yaakov understood that was 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
He understood that was the time. It was meant to be. He understood that was the time. And so we're jumping ahead a little bit, but we're going to get to that he understood that was the amount of time. The rest of it was extra. But then he understood 7 years ago.
Now, when Rivka sent Yaakov to go to Haran, Rachel wasn't even born yet.
She was born already.
Oh, she was?
But you know, you mean because she wasn't born because it was before the 14 years. You're right.
Yeah.
She wasn't born. That's right. She wasn't born yet. That's correct. See, what Donnie is saying. That it was when Rivka sent Yaakov to go, he first went for 14 years to go study.
Mm-hmm.
She was born during those 14 years. Right. That's true. And she wasn't even born yet. Rivka also was able to see with a vision that goes beyond the... Right?
If Yaakov had prophecy that he was going to be buried with Rachel, why did he watch himself closer? Because ultimately he was the reason why he wasn't buried with Rachel. You could say Rachel was the reason, but it was really his...
You're talking down the line.
Yeah.
Over there. Okay. All right. Let's wait till we get to those. You're asking about the stories where he says whoever took the idols. We'll have to wait till we get to those stories. But that's a good point. He does know already from here that's not going to happen. Okay, so we're going to have to stop here until next week. But what we're up to is that Rachel has now run to tell her father about Yaakov. And now we're going to have the first meeting between Lavan and Yaakov, which is going to be very informative. Please remember that next week we will meet again at 8 o'clock, not at 7:30. And it should not be in this room. It should be in our regular place. There's a wedding, that's why it was open with Toby.